They don't say anything about foil in the announcement, but I bet you there's foils.
Oh, good. Yeah, they'll probably come back and be like, they're all foil, and they're pre-Pringled for your pleasure.
Ugh. So Pringly.
Pre-Ingles. Pringles. Welcome to episode number 82 of the Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I just got back from the Legacy Pit 2 Open in Richmond, Virginia, and I'm all fired up to play Legacy soon.
Okay, so when are you going to play Legacy next?
At Magic 30.
Okay, that's fair. Yep, that's a good time to do it. Yeah. Well, I'll bring a Legacy deck. We can play a little Legacy. We can practice up. How did your tournament go?
I went 4-4. It doesn't matter. Everyone was fun to play with. Had a great time. I do have a funny story about how I lost my fourth match, which we'll talk about later. But it was a blast, you know? And I went to school in Richmond, so it was good to just hang around Richmond for 2.5 days, essentially. It was fun.
What was the best meal you had while you were there?
The best meal I had while I was there, the nachos I had at a taco place called Don't Look Back. That's okay. Scott's Addition.
All right, very nice. I have enjoyed the food in Richmond when I have been there. So
yes,
lots of good options. Well, you went to the Legacy Pit too, and you did some interviews, as we have traditionally done at large tournaments. And I will let you intro those after we do what we always do and crack open the memory jar. All right, our card this time is Mass Appeal. This is an uncommon from Avacyn Restored. It is 2 and a blue for a sorcery, and it says draw a card for each goal. Huh. Yep, that's a card. The best I can find is that there was one copy in a standard deck that made the top 8 in GP Minneapolis in 2012. It was a blue-white humans deck. Delver humans. So it had, like, Delvers and Champions of the Parish, Geist of St. Traft, which is not a human, but powerful Snapcaster Mage, and then they were like, I guess I want to draw some cards, but this just seems like not the best way to do that. So Avacyn Restored, a famously underwhelming draft set, had 116 creatures and it looks like 42 humans, mostly in white, blue, and red, and more than half of the common creatures were humans, and there are a few cards that make human tokens. So that is a lot of humans, but it really seems like you need a specific humans deck. I mean, could you play this in limited?
I have no idea. I played one draft of this and milked out of it and just played standard for the rest of that season. So
Avacyn Restored was right before I came back to Magic, and from what I hear about it, that seems like it was a good move. I just don't know why you would want 3 mana for like a conditional divination. That just seems bad. Kind of a dud on this one.
This whole limited format was a dud. The only thing I'll say about it is that I had the most boring time playing Magic. And I have played 4-color Yorian piles recently. And those are more fun to play than Avacyn Restored Limited, which is saying a lot.
That is not saying a lot. Well, since this one was kind of a dud, and because I just learned how to make a random card button that searches for a card by collector number, let's do a bonus card for this show. Since this is our 82nd episode, let's find ourselves a random card with collector number 82. All right. So collector number 82 from Scars of Mirrodin was Assault Strobe. This is a single red mana for a sorcery that says target creature gains double strike until end of turn. All right. Yeah, this is real.
Yeah, this was it's used in Pauper in those Kiln Fiend decks because it turns out it's just fewer spells you have to cast to make it lethal, so it's fantastic.
Kiln Fiend, classic, 1 and a red for a 1/2 elemental beast, I think? And whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, it gets +3/+0 until end of turn, so a great way to smash your opponent. It's definitely played in those Pauper decks, and it used to see modern play because Kiln Fiend was definitely like a modern playable card in those the blue-red Delver decks, and then the like elemental combo decks, because it was an elemental, so you could get all this mana, cast a bunch of spells. It even saw play in that standard, because Kiln Fiend was in standard for Rise of the Eldrazi to Scars of Mirrodin. So if Kiln Fiend is part of your meta, Assault Strobe seems like a pretty good card for it.
Yeah, and with the way effect changed, it was just the creature dealing damage. It wasn't just they got so many poison counters, right? So this was a cute two-card combo with Putrefax, which was basically a 5/3 green haster that had infect. And it also had, you know, you could play it on, like, trying to think now of good infect cards that don't have protection from red. So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think, there was that green-red infect deck that basically just played all the green infect guys and then the colorless ones. And then Assault Strobe for red. Yeah, Putrefax was the Infect Ball Lightning. It had Trample and Haste, and you had to sacrifice it after you play it. So it's like, yeah, if they don't have a blocker, you just tend them. And it costs 6 mana, which isn't great, but
yeah,
that seems like a thing you could do. This is the only 1-mana spell, I think, that gives a creature double strike. There are a bunch of cards, and we've had some recently. Twinferno in Dominaria United is another one that are 2-mana for the effect, but those are all at instant speed. And this being a sorcery means you really kind of need to be going off and be able to protect your creature in order to play it.
I'm going to eat my words here at some point in life, but I doubt we'll see the instant version of the one red mana give a creature double strike. I think Assault Strobe is just it. Like, again, I'll eat my words if I'm wrong. In like 5 years, they'll release it. Then I'll say, I'm going to eat my words. Blah, blah, blah. You know, what can I say?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll give us something like one, and maybe they'll do Phyrexian Mana again or something. Oh, horrible. All right, maybe not. Ah. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get into our interviews? Christian, do you want to kick us off from the event?
Yeah, I will do that right now.
Hey guys, it's Christian here. I am at the Legacy Pit 2 today. It's a Legacy tournament down in Richmond. Kind of a rarity, but it's good to play. I am interviewing some people. We're going to talk today about, you know, what their favorite event ever is, a card that people remember from that event, and anything else really that wants to jog the memory. So hope you strap in, enjoy this episode of the Memory Jar, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, so just to give you a little more context about this, the Legacy Pit Open 2 is an independent tournament that was run by the Pit Game Store that's in Maryland, and it was mainly for old farts. You know, there wasn't like a ton of side events. The side events you could play were older Magic formats. Like, they had Vintage, like 15 card proxy Vintage, for example, as a side event. And yeah, it was good. You got to there's a lot of people that knew each other due to kind of the insular communities that these Eternal format communities present. And, you know, I saw people I'd recognize from other tournaments. I saw people that I knew, and it was, you know, it was super fun. So I thought, you know what, we're all boomers here. Let's all ask what our favorite Magic tournaments were and what card we remember from them. I thought that was just very emblematic of our Magic collective Magic experience there.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you're right, it's a great community, and you certainly got some interesting guests, including our first one is a personal friend of the podcast.
Yeah, Liz Lynn. We've always wanted to get her on the podcast. We have some designs to get her on the podcast here shortly, so I don't want to spoil too much or jinx us, but I wanted to ask her those questions, and she delivered something absolutely fantastic.
So I'm here with fan favorite of the pod and freaking guest contributor Liz. Liz, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
That's awesome. What'd you play yesterday?
I played Legacy Elves, and I did not do well.
I'm so sorry.
It happens.
Yeah. So we're asking today, favorite tournament you ever attended, and if there's a card you remember for that tournament. What do you got?
My favorite tournament ever was SCG Baltimore. I happened to win that event, so there's a reason I like it. The card I remember from it is Geth, Throne of Geth. It was strictly worse than Ratchabomb on my sideboard, but I played a game against 4-color Loam where I played it, sacrificed it, proliferated my opponent's Chalice of the Void to 2. Their hand was Life from the Loam, Life from the Loam, Hymn to Turok, and Dark Confidant, and they just died on the spot. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. The Ratchabomb was just better because it was like better in other spots, and it also dealt with Chalice, but for some reason Throne of Geth was like the card I chose to play, and I won that game very handily because of it.
That's amazing. So that's a fantastic card. I remember when that came out in Limited, and I thought it was just a Limited bomb, and then everyone started playing it, and I was like, yeah, I get it. It's good.
It's also kind of underrated in Commander, I think, because like it doesn't have to sack itself. It can sack other artifacts. You kind of get to go nuts with it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, Liz. We appreciate it. And good luck in your home and keep being a boss.
Hell yeah. Let's talk about some cards.
Yeah. All right, so Liz mentioned Throne of Geth. That is an uncommon artifact from Scars of Mirrodin. It is 2 generic mana, and it says tap, sacrifice an artifact to proliferate. I'll just note that the tournament that Liz is talking about was a team tournament that she played and won with a friend of the podcast, Ryan Overturf, as well as Jacob Hagen. And it's an interesting card. It was often played in hardened scales and still is, actually, but she was playing it out of the board in a Death Shadow deck, specifically because it hilariously hoses Chalice, as she illustrated in that story, just being like, oh, you can't cast any of your cards for the rest of the game. Enjoy.
Exactly. It also saw some Mirrodin block instructed play with like the mono black infect deck. That was also famously the block tournament that played Tempered Steel. So there's a lot of artifacts going around, and Throne of Geth had a role in some of that. But yeah, it was, you know, I like that this was a card that was a limited powerhouse. People kind of slept on it. Liz used it to great hilarity, right? Instead of Ratchet Bomb, this is just better. And then it's been picked up. Like, it's been a sideboard option for some other competitive decks. I know LSV played it in, I think, when Oko was a thing, if I remember correctly. Mm. But, like, yeah, you know, it really messes with some of those foundational, like, sideboard cards like Engineered Explosives, Chalice of the Void, Ratchet Bomb, if you really want to mess things up or make it worse for you. Yeah. I don't know. That might not work so much.
It's definitely an interesting angle to take the card instead of the, you know, the hardened scales decks that are using it with modular creatures to have a way to sacrifice them and then increase their number of counters and everything. So pretty sweet.
So next I talked to a trio. I happened to get them playing this other fantastic card game called Love Letter, which I think we'll probably go over because it's a fantastic card game and we like tangents on this podcast. And but yeah, I got to interview all three of them, and let's hear what they said.
Okay, I'm watching a Love Letter game between Micah, Anderson, and Ross here. And it looks intense, but I'm going to see if they can share their favorite tournament, and a card they remember. So, Micah, I'm going to start with you. What was your favorite tournament you ever attended, and what was the card you remember from it?
It was SCG Richmond 2020. It was the Modern Classic. It was my first top 8 of a SCG event, playing Green-White Titan prior to the banning of Field of the Dead and Once Upon a Time. And Primeval Titan was definitely my favorite card out of that.
Why? Is it just because it gets 2 lands?
3.
Yes, because it has been a staple in the decks that I've played for many years, Amulet Titan being my other. So Primeval Titan has just been a mainstay in my wheelhouse for a very long time.
Sweet. Do you have a favorite version?
GP promo.
That's a sweet one. That is a sweet one. Okay, Anderson just won Love Letter, so he's shuffling. But Anderson, what about you?
Probably GP Detroit 2019, 2018, somewhere in there. It was Team Unified Modern. I played Tron for my team. It was my first GP cash. And like the Friday before, we went out to a Detroit Tigers game that was sick. Had a lot of good food, a lot of good memories from that event. And so probably Karn Liberated is the card.
So why Pantless Karn?
I played Tron for like 6 years, and that's like the deck that like got me into Modern and got me a lot of results and a lot of the stuff I have now. So you know, the cards won me a lot of money, so I have a nice French copies as well.
Oh, what's the French name?
Karn Liberaire.
That's like a very French name, like you think Egalite, Liberté, Fraternité. It's like that should be, it's, Karn should have been in the French Revolution.
Yeah, he would have, three. He would have helped for sure. He imagine Karn storming the Bastille.
Sorry, Ross just got obliterated. So, Ross, now that you're out, unfortunately, with some bad luck, what about you?
SCG Baltimore 2018 was Modern, where I had debuted as a Phoenix at a team event a few weeks before that. We, our team made the top 8, but lost. And I refined the deck quite a bit. And, you know, everyone was sort of questioning whether it was actually good or it was just a fluke. And won the tournament. And that's, you know, what started Is It Phoenix being dominant in Modern for several months after that. And then certainly Gutshot, you know, that was one of my primary additions to the deck from the early lists that were floating around on Modo to give you more free spells to transform Thing in the Ice on turn three more reliably. That was a metagame that had a lot of Noble Hierarchs, a lot of humans, Advanced Spirits, so Gutshot was just a good card. And I ended up dealing the final point of damage in game three of the finals with a hard cast Gutshot. So.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Did you, have you ever had lethal with Gutshot any other time besides that?
Probably, but nothing that, you know, comes directly to mind. I played the deck long enough that, you know, I'm sure it happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you all. Really appreciate it. And keep enjoying Love Letter and good luck. Oh, whoa, whoa.
I'd like to point out that I think this is like our 10th game and Ross has yet to win.
Yes.
You know what?
The fact that I pointed out all of the misplays you two have made.
But that's just the grind, right? Well, thank you all. I really appreciate it. Good luck in the rest of the Modern tournament.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It cracks me up that they were playing Love Letter, which, by the way, is just an excellent game to bring to Magic tournaments for when you have time between rounds. It's a 3-minute game sometimes, and involves, as you could tell there, a lot of good-natured ribbing and occasional trash talking.
Yeah, and it's also, again, super quick, so you can get a bunch in. I famously have, I think, a perfect losing record at Love Letter at GPs. I've never won a game, so... Maybe I'll win one day. I doubt it, though.
Maybe I will bring a copy to Magic 30 and we'll see how it goes.
Oh, Love Letter Cube, maybe? Ooh. So let's talk about... We'll first talk about Micah's card. So Micah's card was Primeval Titan, in case you don't know what this card is. Primeval Titan is 4 green-green for a 6/6 giant that has trample. And when it enters the battlefield or attacks, you may search your library for up to 2 land cards... Put them on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, I mean, I think Micah said what can be said about Primetime. It does what it does, and it's the linchpin to many of these decks. I did look up his particular deck, and interestingly, he called it Green-White Titan, and it played no white cards in the main. I mean, I think there's an old joke that white gets great sideboard cards, so, and sure enough, his sideboard was almost entirely white cards with a bunch of lands in the main deck to cast them.
Yeah, it's good to get around, you know, like that funny restriction that you should make your deck better maybe with some cards and the colors you're looking at in the main deck. No, just bring in those busted sideboard cards and don't worry about it. Don't clutter your deck with dumb cards like Swords to Plowshares or, you know, other white cards that I can't remember the name of right now, but definitely exist.
You know, Rest in Peace, like really, really good sideboardy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, those cards. Yeah. You know, Sultari Knight. I don't know.
Nice.
Yes. Famously, Primeval Titan is banned in EDH, which is the first place many people want to play it. But there's a reason it got banned, because it turns out that's the first thing many people want to play when that's legal in EDH.
All right. Well, Anderson talked about Karn Liberated, classic as it is, or should I say... Karn Liberer?
Liber.
I don't know. I don't know the French.
I could do the French. I'm not gonna. Okay. Je parle un peu de français. Je peux dire le carte Karn Liberer pour the audience. My French is starting to wane, but I will say it. So Karn Liberer, 7 mana, plus 4. Le joueur cible exile une carte de sa main minus 3.
Exactly. All right. The non-French speakers here. Karn is a mythic from New Phyrexia. Sheesh. He costs 7 generic mana for a 6 loyalty planeswalker. His +4 is target player exiles a card from his or her hand. The -3 is exile target permanent, and the -14 is restart the game, leaving in exile all non-Aura permanent cards exiled with Karn Liberated, then put those cards onto the battlefield under your control. So Karn can be a special kind of control deck in which you just exile a bunch of your opponent's stuff, or even your stuff, and then you restart the game, put them in play, and you basically always win the restarted game. is the way that works.
Yes. Or in French, recommencer la partie en laissant en exil toutes les cartes de permanent non aura exilé avec camp libéré, puis mettez ces cartes sur le champ de bâtier sous votre contrôle.
Wow. I just wanted to note, I love that you can hear Anderson like shuffling the love letter cards in his hand in the background of the interview. Just a true Magic player.
Yes. I feel like once you get the shuffle and the flick in, that's all you do. Like, you could be holding a restaurant menu and you're like, you know?
Yep. I am guilty of doing that for sure.
And lastly, let's talk about Ross's card, which we're pretty sure maybe it was just Ryan in disguise. So, Ryan, if you're in Richmond, please tweet at us. It's Gutshot. Gutshot is one red, or, well, one Phyrexian red for an instant. And it says Gutshot deals one damage to any target. Pretty simple.
Yeah. Definitely a Ryan Overture favorite. Dealing the final point of damage with Gutshot is just, I've done it. It's one of the best feelings in Magic, right? It's rarely better than that.
Well, it's great because you have to look at your life total, right? And then you look at your opponent, and then you go, oh, I don't die, and you die. This is great.
And here we are with Phyrexian mana. We kind of joked about it earlier, but so it looks like there are 9 cards that cost 1 Phyrexian mana as the cost, but 2 of those, Corrosive Gale and Postmortem Lunge, have an X, so they don't really do anything on their own. It's really more like 7 then. And then 2 of those, Gitaxian Probe and Mental Misstep, are banned in Modern and Legacy. Gitaxian Probe because it's too good, and Mental Misstep because it's obnoxious. And yet your Gutshot remains. Gutshot's not a bad one. I wanted to specifically shout out one of the other ones in this cycle, Noxious Revival, which is a Phyrexian green mana for an uncommon from New Phyrexia. It's an instant, and it says put target card from a graveyard on top of its owner's library. It's just a great thing to do in Commander at the end of the opponent's turn before you. It's like, I want to regrowth this card, but I get to do it for free.
Yeah. On the scale of playable to not playable, I don't think I've ever seen anyone cast Morrow Shards outside of New Phyrexia Limited. And I played 2 Surgical Extraction in Legacy. So that's probably the scale you want to look at for the playability of these cards.
I want to shout out one more thing, because I'm kind of an evangelist on Noxious Revival. It's so good in Commander because it's one of the few regrowth effects where you can put a card from someone else's graveyard on top of their library, which is an awesome way to be like, oh, we need to deal with this guy. You have a Wrath in your graveyard. Put it on top.
Or to stop a reanimation spell.
Yeah, you could, I mean, stop a reanimation spell, put it on top, then mill him again. All right, well, your next interview had a real banger.
So I'm here with Romario. Romario and I played in Richmond way back in the day, too far back in the day, and now you're just a Legacy boss, right?
I don't know if I'm a boss, but I play Legacy, yeah.
I think you're a Legacy boss. You're pretty well known. So we're asking everyone again, favorite tournament they attended and favorite card from that tournament. What do you got?
Okay, so it was Brazilian Nationals in 99, I think, and it was Avalanche Riders. The format was split, so I think the first 4 rounds were extended, and I played the Necro deck at that time. So Necro probably a close second, but the second half of the event was Urza Block constructed. And I put together this deck that Avalanche Riders was awesome in the deck, and I had a lot of fun, and it was like my first like big event that I knew what was going on. Like, I had attended GP before, but I was too little. But that one was the first one that I played that was a big event, and I had fun. And Avalanche Riders was definitely the card I remember from that event.
Oh, yeah. You know, Stone Rains of Fools. Keep Stone Raining Fools. It's just, it was super fun. I remember opening that card and, like, loving the hell out of it. And that was Darwin Castle's Invitational card, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. The round's about to start. Appreciate it. And good luck in your next round.
All right. Thank you, man.
Yeah. So just for context for listeners, Romario actually and I go back. We used to play in Richmond together way back in the day. He's a great guy. I love seeing him at these big events. He's a fantastic player, always has been. And yeah, it was just great to talk to him and get that throwback experience.
Yeah, always nice to see people who you used to play with and cards you used to play with. Let's talk about Avalanche Riders. Avalanche Riders is 3 and a red for a 2/2 human nomad with haste. It has Echo for 3 and a red, which means at the beginning of your upkeep, if it came under your control since the beginning of your last upkeep, You sacrifice it unless you pay its echo cost. And it has this great text: when Avalanche Riders enters the battlefield, destroy target land.
Yeah. This is a invitational card. It was this Darwin Castle's invitational card. It was technically the first invitational card ever printed because Ollie Raid won the first invitational, but his card didn't come until much later in Magic's history. Darwin Castle got his done first, and that's it.
This was on the Time Spiral Time Shifted sheet, which made it modern legal. And so this used to be played in modern Living End decks, which just gross to throw this back onto the battlefield and blow up a land when it enters. And haste. I mean, that's real nice. This was also really popular in Urza's Block Constructed, one of the most famous Block Constructed formats, because there were a lot of decks in that format that played Talarian Academy, just a bunch of artifacts. So kind of important to kill that one.
Yes. And speaking of that, I actually always prefer the Urza Legacy printing because the Urza's Legacy printing has this interesting, like, kind of game design or card design effect that helps new players, right? So it starts with Echo, and you know Echo's bad. And you're like, what am I going to get for Echo? The next line is unaffected by summoning sickness. Great. I can attack for two the turn it comes into play. And that last line, it destroys the land. You're like, yeehaw! We're going to attack for two and destroy land, baby.
Yeah, the reprints, they put haste up top. I mean, they had also keyworded that, so that was helpful.
Yeah.
But that is kind of an important thing to know. I thought it was interesting that when they did this in the Mystery Boosties, which, by the way, what a wild card to put in Mystery Boosters, they went with the Urza's Legacy printing. So it has all of the, you know, summoning sickness text.
Mm. Thank you, Gavin. The correct choice. Well, next, I talked to a level 2 judge named TK, who I met at the event. He's a great guy, and he has a very interesting card he wanted to talk about with an interesting tournament.
Okay, I'm here with TK. He's a level 2 judge and from Baltimore. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so thank you for coming to interview. So I'm asking people favorite tournament they've ever attended and the card that they remember from that tournament. So what's jogging your memory? What are you thinking about?
So, fun story. GP Vegas, the Legacy GP, like I want to say 2017, 2018. This was my very first Legacy GP. Never played in a big tournament in my life before. And the last round, it's my win and end for day two. I'm playing I'm mostly the Maverick guy. So I played Maverick, and it was up against Grixis Delver at the time. This was post DRS ban. So, you know, there were more of like the mid range control grindy variants. So, you know, game one, I got it. Game two, they got it. Game three is down to, I'm at 10 life, they're at 5. It was 5 or 7. They had very little life total. And I have Cigar or House of Heroes in my hand, which basically says it's a 5-mana angel that she prevents things to be sacrificed.
Yep.
So no sudden edicts, diabolic edicts. No edicts. No edicts. No more edicts when she's out. But I needed a land drop. So we go back and forth. Until finally I found a Verdant Catacombs. I slammed it. I cracked it. I tapped on my mana. And my opponent says Butterskull. And I'm like, you know, in like an anime where like they get like pumped up and like all their background music's going. Yeah, I just I just said Sigarda and just slammed it on the table. And everyone just looked at me. He's like, what? Happening, and everyone is like, it was literally just like, you deal with this, and like, I am winning this game. It's just like, blood's pumping, adrenaline's on high, and yeah, that was my first day too with Sigarda Hosted here on. So, she's always she's not good right now, but she will always have a place in my heart.
Well, I can't follow that, so that's fantastic. Thank you, TK, for that fantastic story.
anytime, yeah.
And good luck for the rest of the day.
Thank you, you too.
Let's talk about this Sigarda here. This is the first version of Sigarda, Host of Herons. Herons? Herons? I don't know. Canadians, come at us. We need to figure that out. It's two.
It's herons. She's got a heron head on her staff. It's
okay, heron. It's heron. Okay. Two green, white, white for a 5/5 legendary angel. She's from Abyss and Restored as a mythic. She has flying and hexproof, and spells and abilities your opponents control can't cause you to sacrifice permanents. Pretty cool.
Yeah, sick. Sigarda is one of the few characters who, in all three Innistrad sets, is represented. Is green-white every time. So no color changes. And is mythic every time. I feel like a lot of times when they give us these legendary characters, they'll kind of bounce around at rarities. But no, she was in Shadows Over Innistrad and then again in Midnight Hunt. So we've seen a bunch of different Sigardas. She keeps getting smaller, though. She went from a 5-5 to a 4-5 to a 4-4. Is this telling us something about Innistrad? She's going to be a, I guess, a 3-4 next time? Tune in to find out.
Yeah, she's always had some interesting ability that protects you, though, which I always find fascinating. Like, this version, you can't sacrifice stuff, which is also was a good kind of pressure valve for the Eldrazi that came the previous block, right? In Shadows Over Innistrad, she gave you Hexproof, and all your creatures Hexproof, so that was pretty cool. And I forgot the new one, because I didn't really play a whole lot of that Sigarda, so I assume she protects you.
It's a human tribal Sigarda. She doesn't really do anything for you. She's a 4-4 for 4 that flies in. Cares about humans.
Oh, yeah. She's, well, anyway, I like my theory. I'm going to let it stand. So,
yeah. So he was talking about Maverick, which is traditionally been a Green Sun Zenith aggressive toolbox deck. Knight of the Reliquary is a card that you see in Maverick decks. But just, Green Sun Zenith as a way to go get whatever green creature you may need. Kind of early Birthing Pod, then Birthing Pod took over, and then Birthing Pod was banned, and Green Sun Zenith was banned, and then the Court of Calling kind of came back into favor after that for your toolbox decks. But it's one of that style of deck, but it's traditionally been a more aggressive version.
Interesting that one of the consistent things with Maverick decks is it plays Knight of the Reliquary, usually, because you're a toolbox deck on multiple axes, so you would find green creatures, like you would be able to tutor out, like, a Gaddock Teak if you absolutely needed to. You'll be able to tutor out, Collector, Oof, etc. But Knight of the Reliquary serves as a second toolbox because you could turn your lands into actually good spell lands. So, like, on a moment's notice, you could tutor for a Bajuka Bog to exile someone's graveyard. You could tutor for, mana fixing if need be. You could tutor for, like, a chain so your Knight of the Reliquary got +3/+3 at the end of the day, right? So it's definitely aggro. It's kind of morphed and evolved into more of just, like, let's just make a 2020 as fast as possible, but those are the constraints of Legacy. You got to win fast. If you can't win fast, don't even bother playing.
Yeah, I like the early versions of the deck where you weren't only doing a land thing, but it's like you would have Stoneforge Mystic to get a sword or whatever you may need. Those first decks, I don't know if the newer Legacy ones do, but it played Sylvan Library to be a little more consistent with what you're drawing. But anyway, yeah, really, really cool deck.
Now we're going to talk about a card, but this one might be a little more mythic than you realize.
So I'm here with Elaine Cao. Is that right, Cao?
Yes.
That's awesome. I want to make sure I pronounce that right. Good. So we're in Richmond. She has a fantastic story. And I wasn't recording, so I apologize. She's going to try to restart this, but go ahead, Elaine.
Hi. Yeah. So I think my one show that sticks out to me is GP Detroit in 2019. Well, Magic Fest Detroit, whatever.
Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, we know. Yeah.
I was judging as I typically do. This was one of my first GPs, but I had quite a bit of experience at this time. And the thing that I remember most about it was that my friend had asked me to get him one of those giant Sarahs, like one of those giant oversized cards the Sarah Ascendant. And I ended up, while like also working like the entire day, I like managed to figure out trading my like judge comp boxes for tickets so that I could get one of these, and it was extremely chaotic. I had no plans. Like I flew home with this thing. I begged them to like stick it in like the first class like coat hanger area or whatever, because I was like, no, like this can't be checked. It's going to break. Like it's literally just styrofoam. But I got it home. There was a bit of a ding, but he was fine with it. So it's just like completely last minute getting this oversized card.
I just imagine you carrying it in the airport and having to go through security, and they're like, and you're like, oh no, that's with me.
The security, actually, one of the security people actually played Magic, so he was like, oh my god, that's really cool, I'm gonna take a picture of this. And I'm like, okay, sure. The fun part was actually that my hotel was like was about half a mile away from the venue, and it was like downtown Detroit, and which if you've never been to the convention center there, it's actually really pretty, but it's like extremely open. So you just imagine me carrying this giant oversized card, and there's probably hundreds of people around just being like, what the hell are you like, what is this? So that was really fun.
So where's the Sarah Senate now?
What's the Sarah Senate now? It's with this is Sarah the Benevolent.
The Benevolent. Oh yeah, yeah. The Planeswalker.
My friend has it hung up in his house in St. Louis. Now I have my own oversized card, but that didn't come from an event. I just purchased it. So
okay, you know. So a lot less dramatic to get that.
Actually, I mean, there's a story with that too, if you want to hear that.
Sure,
one.
Go ahead.
So I was in Calgary, Alberta, which is where I always live. I was visiting Montreal to judge a face-to-face there, and I visited face-to-face's like storefront. They're like LGS, and they had a bunch of oversized cards, and I'm like, oh wow, there's a Japanese nurse at Puerto Vales for like 700 Canadian, which is like really nice actually. But I'm like, so I talked to them, and I'm like, well, I want this, but I can't get it to Calgary, can you help me with that? And they're like, oh yeah, like we can just ship it on our pallet the next time we have a show in Calgary. They never did that. They ended up like just shipping it special to Calgary. It took like probably 6 months to get to me, and then literally 2 months after it arrived, I was like, so I'm actually moving to Montreal. And they're like, but we could have just so now you're taking it back to Montreal with you. And I'm like, yeah. So they were a little bit annoyed, but it was fine. I gave them money, so yeah, it doesn't matter.
And it worked out. I mean, you know, just a roundabout way to get it where it should be. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking time between judging, and have a great rest of the day.
Take care.
Well, that was more about the logistics than the actual card, but I will read Sarah the Benevolent from the original Modern Horizons. She is 2 white for a 4-mana legendary planeswalker. Sarah, her +2 is creatures you control with flying get +1/+1 until end of turn. She has a -3 to create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying and vigilance. Get it, a Sarah Angel. You get it?
All right.
And the -6 is you get an emblem with, if you control a creature, damage that would reduce your life total to less than 1 reduces it to 1 instead, which is the worship effect, the same as the enchantment worship. You don't really need to talk about the card, but I always wondered how people moved the giant cards around. They got them at a GP or whatever the events are now. Yeah, it was a good story.
I always wondered, because if you weren't a local, like, I've shipped stuff from a GP home before, like through FedEx, and that's annoying. So kudos to Elaine for actually carrying it on an airplane through security internationally with her. And imagine you're going into like customs, and they have to look at you, and you're like, they're looking at your passport, and you got this big magic card with you, and you have to be casual about it. You're like, hey, I'm here, I'm not declaring anything.
Oof. Seems like a lot. If I were her, I would have been a little bummed that she also didn't get a giant angel token and a giant Sarah emblem.
Oh yeah.
If you play this, I assume you get like those giant fuzzy novelty dice to keep track of the counters.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Like, if it's not hanging on your wall, it's like a coffee table thing. And so you can just be like, she's got 4 counters, I say go.
Or you put it on the wall, and then when you play the card of the game, you just point at the wall.
Yeah.
You're like, that card. And then you hang a fuzzy dice in front of it.
Yes. Oh, I kind of now want an oversized card to do this. This sounds pretty great.
There are a lot of oversized cards I would put on my wall. I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Well, this might have been an oversized card. Let's talk about a card that maybe has an oversized reputation.
That's one of your better podcast transitions ever, I have to tell you.
So I'm here with Guido Rebozio. We had a fantastic match yesterday where it was wild. We were both tired. It was fantastic. And so, Guido, what was the favorite tournament you ever attended, and what card do you remember most from that tournament?
So favorite tournament was GP Vegas, and I believe it was 2016 for Legacy. And favorite card had to be Deathrite Shaman. Unban it. Let's go.
Why Deathrite specifically?
It's just a card that I've always loved. Powerful, and it just enabled a lot of degenerate stuff, and I'm all about that.
just pure degeneracy. I get it. Like, I still have a playset. Actually, I actually have 2 playsets to this day.
in case they on the off chance unban it in something other than Pioneer. So I get it. I get it.
Yep. I still have my playset of foils as well.
Just waiting.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So Guido was talking about Death Red Shaman here. I'm going to read the card real quick. It's a fantastic card. You've probably heard a lot about it. Death Red Shaman is one Golgari hybrid for a 1/2 elf shaman. You can tap it to exile target land card from graveyard. Add one mana of any color. Black tap, exile target instant or sorcery card from graveyard. Each opponent loses 2 life. Or green tap, exile target creature from a graveyard. You gain 2 life. It's a pretty broken card with fetch lands. I mean, that's been firmly established, I think. What people call the one mana planeswalker.
Yeah. I mean, it's banned in Modern and Legacy because it's just busto with fetch lands. It's not busted in Pioneer. I don't know if it's played at all, but I'm glad that Pioneer exists only because I played 2 of these in my very first standard deck, which was a green and black graveyard themed deck with like Night Howlers and Satyr Wayfinders to dump cards at the graveyard. And when that rotated out of standard, it wasn't legal in any format because Deathrite Shaman was banned in Modern. And so I was like, I can't do it. I have the deck together. I can't do anything with it. Now, if I really wanted to, I could play it in Pioneer, even though it would be awful. So that's nice.
Yes. I want to share kind of the unifying reason I talked to Guido is that we played in my final match on the first day. So we were both out of it. We just wanted to play Legacy because how often do you get to play Legacy? And the match ended up going down to, he had 2 of this card called Maddening Hex enchanted on me, which is, I'll just read it out real quick. It's 1 red for an enchantment aura curse, and it enchants a player. And whenever that player casts a non-creature spell, they roll a d6, and then they take damage equal to the number that was rolled on that die. So I was pretty done. He was at 1 life. He had a Maddening Hex on his. And I had just drawn a lightning bolt, and I was at 3 life with 2 maddening hexes. So I said, you know what? I'm going to lose this anyway. There's nothing we're playing for. I'm just going to try to lightning bolt him and see if I get the 1 in 36 chance of not dying. And so I flip it, play it. I pick up the die, and I roll it, throw it down, and the number's a 6.
Oh. I was hoping the first one would be a 1 at least to let you feel the hope.
Oh, no hope. It was fun. So it was a blast. We had a great match, and I wanted to follow up and hear his story the next day. So,
as somebody who has a couple of Maddening Hexes in the sideboard of my Legacy deck, I'm glad to hear that it's so brutal.
It's a very good Magic card, and I'm glad it's not Modern legal because it would have been banned. So that's all I have to say.
That would be a problem.
Well, I guess we have to end at some point. So for this last story, let's get ready for Winter's Chill. And maybe we go find a nice little cave to hibernate.
So I'm with Paul here, Paul Lynch. He is a Baltimore native. I've seen him around a lot of tournaments locally. He's fantastic. And I want to ask you, favorite tournament and what card do you remember from that tournament?
Okay, so my favorite tournament, and we're going to go back a bit. I had been away from the game for a little bit and had friends that were like, hey, I know you used to play Legacy, come back. Blue's good. I was like, okay. And this was like right before Star City started up their, you know, like the full circuit they had, right. And we brewed Merfolk. We were playing a spicy blue-white Merfolk deck, and the field was literally, it was survival combo everywhere, and I was still playing, old-school standstill, like, Aethervol Merfolk list, and I wind up playing, like, 3 copies of Submerge in the, Hibernation in the sideboard. Did not play survival 1 time in the entire 9-round, 10-round tournament. Top 8 at the event, and then beat survival 3 times in the top 8 to win the 2010 Baltimore Legacy Open.
Oh, right, yeah.
And wind up just destroying the field. And it was, like in amazing fashion, like returning multiple Vengevines and survivals and mana dorks in the finals, and it was just great.
It's nice when you can have a one-sided up people, and you're like, it's like
it was amazing. It was amazing.
Are you sad you don't get to do that anymore? Because they banned survival shortly after that tournament.
So I'm not. See, I'm kind of conflicted about the survival ban when it happened because at the time it was pretty bad for the format, But since then, you have surgical extraction. You also had death rate at that sprint not too much longer after it. And I feel like the format could have adapted to it. Like most other graveyard combo decks, Grave Hate's everywhere now, and I feel like it could have adapted to it. And Survival was a really cool engine when used fairly. Like there were some really cool, like, I think it was called Red Green Survival Advantage.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it was, I believe the deck played like, I think it played like an Elvish Lumberjack for mana advantage and like Flame Tongue Kavu and Cabal Therapies and a lot. It kind of resembles what like the pre-modern survival value deck looks like. And it was a blast to play.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will say selfishly, that's how I got my only copy of Survival because everyone unloaded them and you could get them for super cheap. And now every time I go check it, like, should I sell this? I'm like, no, I'm good. I couldn't even play the deck if I wanted to.
Sad news. I believe I seen a Facebook post last night that the ruling council over the pre-modern, they said something about Show and Tell potentially being unbanned and Survival being banned.
Oh,
rip.
Yeah, so maybe a time to sell that Survival now.
Oh, it's in an EDH deck. I only got one. I'm good. Oh, I'll keep it forever.
You're good then.
Yeah, I'll keep it forever. It's like my iconic, like, young, like, I started in, like, Weatherlight. So it's one of those cards.
Dude,
I remember.
Same here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I started with Portal, like in between Weatherlight and Tempest when Portal came out.
Yeah, I remember, like, being geeked out about Tempest. So, like, Survival is one of those iconic cards for me, like, as a kid, where it's like, I guess I'm going to keep it forever. So.
Yeah, it was definitely one of my first, was that, when your casual decks start winning and they start becoming competitive, it was like a Survival recurring nightmare, squirrel toolbox, opposition, like crazy deck. It was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fun. Well, thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it. Good luck for the rest of the day and hope you do well.
Thank you. Not a problem.
Hibernation. Just a classic old school color hoser. Uncommon from Urza Saga. Reprinted in 8th edition, so modern legal, folks. 2 and a blue for an instant. Return all green permanents to their owner's hands. What a dagger.
It's such a busted card. I'm surprised it's not played more in like EDH or something. This is a sick card.
Well, as we've learned from our conversations about things like Snake Pit, it's sometimes worth putting in some kind of color hoser or something that gives you an advantage. I looked through the rest of Urza's block, and this is by far the worst color hoser of all of them. There are a couple of white cards that'll give all creatures protection from red or protection from black. That can be good. And then there are two cards I specifically wanted to call out that I thought were good but not near this oppressive. The first one is Bereavement, which also hoses green. It's one and a black, and it says, whenever a green creature is put into a graveyard from play, its controller chooses and discards a card. Yikes.
That's pretty good.
And the other one is a green card called Compost, one and a green for an enchantment. Whenever a black card is put into one of your opponent's graveyards, you may draw a card. So less a hoser and more just kind of advantage, but that shows you how brutal Hibernation is. This is like an alpha level color hoser.
It's as bad as like Choke and Boil and Flash Fires. Those are brutal. This is also weird because like there was a design philosophy for up until probably Odyssey, I want to say, that Wizards just felt like they had to put some really weird color hosers in every single like major block set. So not only do you have Hibernation in the set, right? You also have Colors of Protection that have cycling on them. You have Back to Basics, which hoses non-basic lands. You have Douse, which counters red spells. Like, you have Exhaustion, which taps creatures and lands. Like, they just really, they must have really been going through something in the mid-90s where they're like, I just don't like anyone right now. I'm going to make cards where no one likes each other and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, it's really brutal. Also, like, the fact that they gave you Hibernation, but there wasn't really a blue color hoser in the block that was meaningful. I mean, so there was Scald, which was a red enchantment that whenever a player tapped an island for mana, it did a damage to them, which is kind of nasty. I mean, I guess if you're playing mono red and you come up against the blue deck, that seems, you know, pretty nice. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm glad that I like that they occasionally do the cycle of uncommons. That's like a playable card, but then it's better if your opponent, if it targets a card of a particular color or something, or even like the Aether Gust kind of card, is fine. Just not these, like, oh, if you're playing this color and I draw this card, you lose.
Yeah. Oh, you did forget a more impactful color hoser on did that I? List. Carpet of Flowers.
Yeah, great advantage from Carpet of Flowers.
Yeah. So I'll just read that real quick because this card's busted too. Carpet of Flowers is green for an enchantment. During your main phase, you may add up to X mana of one color to your mana pool, where X is the number of islands target opponent controls. Yeah, it's pretty busted.
Also a really good commander card, because somebody at the yes. table will have islands for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It is a $20 card for various yeah. reasons, but that is one of them.
I could do this all day. All right, here's a white one. Sanctimony. This is from Urza's Destiny, I think. It's mm-hmm. whenever one of your opponents taps a mountain for mana, you gain a life.
No, that's awful.
Yeah! Again, this is what you do against the mono-red deck. They're going to have to cast spells. This would also be reasonable in Commander if you cared about individual instances of life gain. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm picking up what you put down. Okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
I'm just saying... They did so many cards that were totally unplayable against, like, all decks but one. And so I'm glad that we are past that.
Yes. Except when it randomly is relevant in Eternal formats. And then it's great.
And then it's great. Well, thanks for doing that. I'm glad you had a good time at the tournament and you got some great interviews. So I look forward to doing this again soon at Magic 30 in Las Vegas.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
At the end of October.
Yes. Halloween. Spooky tournament.
All right. Well, before we go, I had COVID and it sucked. I got to tell you, I was not a fan of COVID. I did a one-night business trip, my first business trip since the beginning of the pandemic. And I masked on the plane and masked around town and masked on the subway and everything. And came back with COVID and was knocked out. Tried not to infect my kids. Was successful in that somehow. But I didn't like it. And so I am really glad that there are going to be masks required at Magic 30 because I don't want other people to get COVID. And I'm quadruple vaxxed and it was still brutal and I hated it. Anyway.
I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm glad you recovered. I will say that I hope in general they require masks for these events just going forward because con crud was always a thing, right? Like, you know, you could get sick on the plane or something and, you know, it's good not to get sick from going to a big, large gathering of humans. Like, there was not only a mask requirement at Legacy Pit Open 2, there was also a vaccination requirement. And this is the first tournament I've ever been to that had a significant, when I say significant, probably in the teens, number of round one buys. Because they just said, you know what? We're not going to drop you from the tournament. Like, you have to show up and you have to be vaxxed or show proof of a negative test and you have to wear a mask. And if you don't want to do either of those, your opponent's going to get a free win. Sucks to be you.
Wow. So, on this note, shout you out specifically. Christian was very kind and sent me a nice grocery delivery when I was stuck on my couch and unable to move. With some snacks and some Gatorade and some voodoo chips, which I had voted as the official chip of the Memory Jar podcast, so he knew that they were my favorite. So Christian, thanks so much for that. You're a great friend.
You're welcome. Least I could do. So I'm glad you're feeling better though.
Me too. As I drink some water and that makes me cough. All right. Well, thank all of you for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback. Please tell us what cards you want to remember. If you are going to be at Magic 30, send us a direct message. We've already gotten a couple. We look forward to seeing you there.
Yes, we're absolutely looking forward to it. Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. And until next time, you know, just enjoy a tournament. Enjoy everything about it. Go out. Be safe. But most importantly, we'll see you next time in Sin City.